This is New Hampshire Public Radio News. It's now 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Last year, New Hampshire charter schools celebrated a financial boost from Governor Hassan's budget after years of struggles over state funds. But this year, these alternative public schools fared less well in the legislature. A bill to help them pay for buildings was shot down, as was a measure to raise their per-pupil state aid. Meanwhile, the House debated bills examining the role charters play in their communities. For example, whether they duplicate education already offered by local districts and how special education students are included. Because of these efforts, some charter school supporters felt a bit under attack this year, or at least under scrutiny, but their movement is steadily growing. Funds have come in from the federal government. Enrollment has doubled in just 5 years, and the state now has 18 charter schools, with another 4 coming this fall. Today in The Exchange, we check back in with charter schools, some of the debates, struggles, and successes. Let's hear from you, too. Are charter schools making a difference in Granite State public education? If so, how? Give us a call. The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have 3 guests in studio. Eileen Luponis is here, Executive Director for the New Hampshire Public Charter School Association, which represents the state's charter schools. Eileen, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Mel Myler, Democratic representative from Contoocook, former executive director of the New Hampshire chapter of the National Education Association. And Representative Myler, good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
And also with us is our own Sam Evans-Brown, NHPR's education reporter. And Sam, thanks for taking time out.
Of course, Laura.
Well, Sam, still at this point, even though we've had charter schools in New Hampshire for some time, a lot of people don't know what they are. So just tell us, give us a basic description of what a charter school is.
Right. So a charter school is a public school of choice, is sort of the term of art that people use to describe them. It means that it's a public school. There's no extra tuition if you want to go to it. It's funded through your tax dollars, just like other public schools. The difference is that anyone can go. You sign up to enroll, and they accept anyone, but it's not the school that you automatically go to as being part of your district. And often they have a different focus, a different sort of philosophy of instruction. If you look around at New Hampshire charter schools, we've got a number that are focused on the arts. We have 3 Montessori schools. There are schools that focus on virtual learning and sort of learning at your own pace through using these computer programs that are gaining in popularity, and then just a variety of other things. You've got there's one that focuses on the Orton Gillingham School of Reading, which, if anyone's heard of that, it's just an alternative school of instruction. So they're public schools. Anyone can go, but they are alternatives.
And we'll get a little bit later in the show into anyone can go, how people get in, and so forth. But Sam, as I said, we've been talking about charter schools for a long time in New Hampshire, for at least 20 years. How has the conversation around this type of public alternative schools changed in the state since they started opening up their doors roughly a decade ago, maybe a little more?
Right. And I think when charter schools first were part of the conversation, there was a lot of fear from the traditional defenders of public school, teachers' unions, and just people who believe very strongly that public schools are a strong public good, that as charter schools grew, you'd be pulling more students and thus more resources away from public schools. And they were really worried about the effects of that. And I think what we've seen is sort of a refining of that dialogue here in New Hampshire, where you have people on both sides who now talk about the benefits of charter schools. The question is just to what extent do you want to allow them to grow? So, some of the folks who traditionally were very opposed to charter schools have sort of refined that message and say, we're not opposed to all of them. We like a few that are targeted in the right place.
Yeah, and funding is always an issue, and we'll definitely get into that. But to you, Eileen, what is a charter school supposed to provide that a regular public school doesn't? Why do we need these?
Well, I think I've always argued that learning styles, much like anything else in life, run a bell curve, and the district schools do a Herculean job of serving the bulk of that bell curve, but there are always the students that are not engaged, whether it's the size of the school that is overwhelming, or it's just not the fit for them, or it's a mission of a charter school that would engage them, would hook them. And so I think that they augment the product line of public education, and we like to be seen as a public education option, not someone who is trying to dismantle public education as they have been accused of, just to supplement the options that people need. And by engaging more children in their education and capturing more, you know, in the long-term economic investment of education, it saves the state money.
I asked Sam this question, but I'd love to hear from you too, Eileen. How do you see the way people think about these schools, the way people talk about these schools, state policy toward these schools? How have you seen that evolve, change over the last, you know, 15 years or so?
Well, it's definitely New Hampshire's behind the curve nationally. What's going on in our House and in our Senate nationally is much more supportive and bipartisan than what we've seen here of late. It used to be in 2009, it was very bipartisan. And I think the conversation is heading back that way because the legislators are hearing from their constituents that it's making a difference in their family's life and the life of their student. It sometimes can be transformational.
So when you say it's getting back to being more bipartisan, what are you talking about between 2009 and now?
In 2009, that's when SB 539 was passed, and that brought public charter schools into the fabric of public education funding in New Hampshire. And that's when both the House and the Senate were held by the Democratic Party, and we had champions that were for public charter schools.
And that was, again, we'll get into this a little bit later, but that changed the way charter schools are adopted, right? It made it a little bit easier for charters to be approved. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I was talking about the funding. SB 539 was when education funding was overhauled, and at that point,
got it.
The $5,450 that we were given represented about roughly 47% of the most recent state average.
Okay.
Currently, we're around 40.
Lots to get into. And Representative Myler, I want to go to you, but let me also invite our listeners to join us. The number here in the exchange for you to become part of our conversation, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. If you've got experience with charter schools, either you work at one or your child attends one, tell us about that. If you're deeply engaged in your traditional public school district, how do you feel about these alternative forms of public education? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Representative Myers, not to forget you, what role do you see charter schools playing in New Hampshire public education? Are they making public education better?
Well, I think the issue here is to make sure that all students in the state have an educational opportunity. And many of these charter schools are providing, as Eileen has said, an alternative that they might not be able to get in the public schools. The major concern, I think, is to make sure that these charter schools are, in fact, offering something that's not available in the residential public school in the community.
Now, what do you mean by that? Give us a little more.
Well, for example, you have in many of the charter schools, they're dealing with at-risk students. Many of those at-risk students would not be able to graduate had they not have a special kind of a program available for them. So those schools, there are about five of them of the 18.
There's one in the North Country that's
right,
pretty famous
exactly.
For that.
That was one of the first ones that was started in 2004. Very successful, engaging, I think, around 60 students. And they are providing an opportunity for those students to basically achieve a high school graduation where they wouldn't ordinarily be able to because of the kind of program, because of the kind of scheduling that's available for them. So they are definitely meeting a need. I think the issue, as I said earlier, that the critics would say, are these schools doing something different than would be available in the regular public school?
So give us an example of the other side of the coin.
Well, if for example, an art program, for example, there are about three that are specifically looking at the arts. Can those arts programs be provided in the public schools rather than in a charter school? And I think that's the test. One of the things that I think that I've got to give credit to our State Department of Education, they have a very rigorous application process. And I know it may be frustrating for those who want to start charter schools, but the program that they have provides staff that works with those who are looking for charter, who wants to start charter schools. And that rigorous process makes sure that once it gets to the State Board of Education, it has gone through that rigor of looking at of everything, the mission, funding, curriculum, et cetera. And as a result of that, of the charter schools that have been granted, we've only had three that have failed. Unlike other states, that have basically just granted charters left and right, and as a result of that, they have failed. So in our state, I think we've done a very good job in providing the foundation for the creation of the charter schools that we have right now.
Well, and I want to ask you in a minute, Representative Myler, about the arts and the focus, because sometimes these charter schools get started focused on the arts because they do engage students, mm-hmm. and public schools have cut the arts. But something else, Sam Evans Brown, to follow up on first real quickly, because folks may not understand. The way that charter schools get approved, get up and running here in New Hampshire is very different than most other states. You just got back from Tennessee, for example. It's a whole different picture there.
Right. So here how it works is, originally how it was it was imagined that it would work is that districts would approve charter schools. Districts would say, we want to have a charter school. They would vote it in and approve it themselves. That never came to pass. There was never a district that set up its own charter school. And in fact, the charters did not get started in New Hampshire until the state began to approve them, until the schools were allowed to go straight to the state, say, we want to start a school in X district. So basically there were a lot of sort of push and pull within the towns, and it was hard to get something going at the local level. But if you could go straight to the state, it made it a lot easier.
That was a big deal, Sam, as I remember.
It was, and it really was necessary in order to get charters going. So depending on how you see charter schools, that's a good or a bad thing.
What about the arts, Eileen, and the role that it seems to play in several charter schools, including two of the four new ones that are coming online? Why the focus on the arts?
It's an arts-integrated approach. It's not necessarily an arts program. The arts-integrated approach teaches the discipline to self-assess and self-critique and know that your final product takes many revisions to get to. And then that type of thinking, that process, infiltrates the rest of the curriculum. And you'll see that in the writing and how they approach math. And it's that arts-integrated approach and that instills that artistic process in the child, not necessarily an artistic program.
And they're still doing math, history, social studies, and so forth. It's not art all day long.
Absolutely.
All right. Again, our phone number here in the exchange for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. Your calls, emails, comments coming up in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Good morning. It's 9:19. You can make sure your membership gift to NHPR goes as far as it can with our corporate match program. Many businesses around the state match your employees' donations to NHPR. You can essentially double the impact of your membership gift. Find out if your company participates at nhpr.org. Partly sunny for most of the state today, mostly cloudy in northern Coos County with a chance of afternoon showers. Today's highs upper 60s, mid-70s across the state. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from the Monshire Museum in Norwich, Vermont, presenting a T-Rex named Sue exhibition, a 42-foot-tall, fully articulated cast skeleton with engaging interactivities, open daily 10 to 5, monshire.org. And A&B Lumber and Home Centers featuring windows and doors by Marvin and Integrity for remodeling replacement projects in Pembroke, Moultonboro, and at ablumber.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a check-in with charter schools. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Do you think charter schools are helping to improve public education in New Hampshire or not? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. All one word. Our guest in the studio, Representative Mel Myler, Democrat from Contoocook. Eileen Luponis is here, Executive Director for the New Hampshire Public Charter School Association. And Sam Evans Brown, NHPR's education reporter. One more time, that exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, Dominique's on the phone from Nashua. Hi, Dominique, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I'm a senior at the Academy for Science and Design in Nashua, which is one of the largest charter schools in New Hampshire. And I just wanted to speak to sort of what I think charter schools are doing for the state. I'm actually doing my senior project on charter schools in New Hampshire and sort of the role that they play in public education. And one of the main things I've found is that charter school supporters, there's a general misconception is that charter school supporters do not support public schools. One of the big problems is that people see charter schools as a threat to public schools, where really there should be sort of a mutual relationship between them, where charter schools provide a service for kids who want to specialize in math and science, like my school, or want to specialize in the arts, or have a different learning style, and that's great for them, and that's doing things for them. And public schools are great for other kids, and I think if people can understand that there's a role for both of them, there'll be much more support for that. And, I mean, I think that's what's best for the kids. I know for me, coming to this school has been amazing, and it's given me opportunities to do things beyond what I would have gotten to do at public school because this is what I'm interested in. And just the youth of the charter schools is another thing. In New Hampshire, they're so new compared to, you know, what we see around the country with charter schools and magnet schools and districts just taking in charter schools and wanting to have charter schools there because they're going to help them out. And I think that as people see more success and more graduates coming onto charter schools, they'll understand it more.
And I know, Dominique, yes, let me ask you a question. So a threat to public schools, I think you're keying in on, you know, years and years of debate there. Why do you think traditional public schools see schools like yours as a threat? Is it about money? Is it about something else?
I do think a lot of it is the money. People don't understand how charter schools are funded. We get 40%. My parents pay property tax on their house in Milford, and all of that money is going to go to Milford Public School. Not all of that money. The money that they're paying for the district is still going to Milford as if I was going to Milford High. But only the state money is coming to my school, so really we're paying that school even though they're not educating me. So we're not taking money away from them, not with our model.
Okay, Dominique, and thank you for calling in. Representative Myler, I know you want to jump in there.
Well, I think Dominique has hit a very important point here. One of my concerns is that is the relationship between charter schools and public schools. Charter schools were originally conceived to be experimental schools of taking away the traditional obligations of public schools to give the less administrative issues than you would have in a charter school.
Laboratories for innovation.
Exactly right. And by learning what's going on in the charter schools, then being able to translate those to the public schools about what's working, what isn't working, what public schools might want to change as a result of what we've learned in these lab schools. My concern is that is not happening right now. You have this schism between the public schools and the charter schools, and Eileen and I have talked about this several times, about how do you begin to integrate the staffs of public schools and charter schools so that they can begin to share what is happening in charter schools and what might be able to be adapted to the regular public schools. That's not happening right now.
Okay, because public dollars are going to those
exactly
charter
right.
schools. Maybe it's more state money. I can see others want to jump in. Go ahead, Sam, and then Eileen, please.
So I just want to clarify sort of why, you know, why we're talking about money when it comes to, you know, because Dominique's comments made it sound like money's really a non-issue. But what happens is if a public school student leaves a public school and goes to a private school, it's true that the local tax dollars coming from local property taxes are not affected. However, the state, what's called adequacy funds, anyone who's been following state education funding knows what adequacy dollars are, but the adequacy dollars, which is the money, it's around $3,450. It's $5,000 once it goes to the charter school. That goes from the public school to the charter school.
And so Milford High doesn't get that $5,000 that
right.
it used to get for Dominique.
Exactly. And so that's the money that people are arguing about.
But it still gets, and I know you want to jump in, Eileen, I just want to make this crystal clear for folks. Milford High still does get whatever local dollars used to follow Dominique from local property taxes.
And there are a plethora of other monies. There's federal monies that go into schools, Title I, and there's other monies that are not affected by charter schools. We're just talking about these adequacy dollars.
Right? Yeah, go ahead, Eileen.
The adequacy that's paid to the charter schools on average is very close to the average that's paid to all public schools in New Hampshire, given all the differentiated aid that follows the $3,450 base. And also in regards to Mel's point about bringing that innovation out to the district schools, there's two opportunities that charter schools have been excluded from most recently. One is the governor's task force on STEM. The Academy for Science and Design, which is the first STEM school in the state and a charter school, should be included in that. They should be able to learn from the successes and the difficulties from that school.
So those folks are not sitting on the governor's STEM advisory.
No, board. And they're also not sitting on the steering committee for turning West into a STEAM school. There's an opportunity for West in Manchester. They're trying to transform to a STEAM school to learn from both the Academy for Science and Design, which is a STEM school, and the Cochico Arts and Technology Academy, which is an arts-integrated high school. Those two schools should be sitting at that table as well, and they're not.
So, again, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts,
yes,
and math. Is that right? You know, Dominique keyed in on something else that I'll ask you about, Eileen. She said, or maybe it was actually Representative Myler, who came out of Dominique's call, that there has been a competition instead of cooperation. It was you, Representative Myler, who talked about that. What do you think about that, Eileen, that when charter schools started, they were supposed to be these laboratories of innovation that would help public schools improve in the process? And he's saying it's not really happening.
They're not really being included. And so, you know, it's easy to say they're not playing together when they're not invited to the sandbox. And I just gave two examples.
Well, and I think also if you think about what is required in order for that to happen, it's sort of, you know, illustrative. I mean, teachers are incredibly busy people at charter schools and at public schools. So what you're asking them to do is to take extra time to go and sit and talk with other teachers from another school. It requires travel. It requires getting out of the routine. It's hard to do just on a logistical basis.
All right. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Dominique, great to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Post a comment there if you'd like. Here's an email from Andrew. He says, as a teacher about to finish my first year in service, congratulations, Andrew, I see a lot of good that can come from charter schools. However, he says, there are many charter schools in New Hampshire that have only enrollment of 20 or 30 students. Not only is this a drain on state funds, let alone a drain on the public school system, many of the smaller charter schools use teachers as tutors and proctors, and students do the majority of learning online as well as for assessments. Andrew says, I think that for charter schools to succeed in New Hampshire, there should be a minimum enrollment population for the school to continue. Andrew, thanks for the email. And Representative Myler, what do you think?
Well, I think we get back to the whole issue again of funding. Charter schools are chartered for a specific number of students that they can handle. The issue of funding is critical. The state budget has a state education budget is about $675 million. Charter schools get about 1% of that. And I've advocated.
It's not a lot.
It's not a lot, but what I've been advocating, and they're competing interests. You've got building aid, for example. We've got 50% of our schools in this state are 60 years or older. We need to retrofit those. That's an issue. The issue of catastrophic aid, which goes to fund special education, that's an issue. So the question that I have, and I've been raising this, is not what the slice of the pie is but how big is the pie? As you increase the funding for all schools, that slice gets bigger, the money gets bigger. And rather than trying to rob Peter to pay Paul to go from one fund to another fund, if we had more money for everything that would go on, that would also increase more money for charter schools.
Isn't some of the movement for charter schools, Representative Myler, coming from parents who are frustrated with their local public schools? For example, in Manchester, you have class sizes that are huge, and some parents are saying, you know, that's not, my kid can't learn in that situation. And the poor teachers have 35 kids. So I wonder if the public schools got better treatment, would we even need these charter schools? What do you think?
That might happen, but I still think that there are some students who need special programs. And, for example, I attended the charter school in the MC Squared in Manchester. It has about 60 students there. And they're dealing, with at-risk kids who would not be able to be successful in a public school. They are being successful there. So I think they are providing a niche that's important for them. And so regardless of how many students would be in a classroom, for those students, this is providing a special program for them.
Yeah. What do you think, Eileen?
I think that it takes a pretty narrow view on how charter schools have a role to play, and that is only alternative high schools, where if the student isn't successful and it would be a blemish on the school if it weren't to graduate from that school, then a charter school is appropriate for that child. And I think that, you know, takes away from the need in the elementary and middle school level as well. And sometimes students decide, you know, at a very early age whether or not they're going to succeed in school and whether or not they like school, and they start to disengage. And maybe a public education option such as an arts integrated school or a STEM school might be more engaging to them, and then you may not have that child in high school not succeed. They need options early as well.
What about the critique? And you and I have talked about this before, Eileen, that although charter schools are technically open to everyone, in some instances, you do see the kids going in there are from families where the parents kind of have the time, the know-how, the resources to get their kid into that school. That if you're working three jobs, you don't have the time to figure out how to enroll. You certainly can't drive your kid there, and sometimes there's not a bus available, a public school bus. What about the concern that charter schools sometimes serve a more elite clientele just because it's the upper middle class parents who, you know, again, have the resources to figure this out?
I think that if you look at the socioeconomic breakdown of all the schools, you'll see that that's false. And that also that the schools as a community are very engaged in reaching out. Mills Falls did a tremendous job in reaching out to their community, MC Squared as well. And, you know, the traditional statistics of free and reduced lunch and the percentage of students on IEPs are just as high, if not higher, in charter schools as they are
really?
In the traditional schools. And you do have communities that are very willing and in carpooling and parents reaching out to each other.
So the same percentage, if I looked at the numbers, I'd see the same percentage of low-income kids, in other words, free and reduced price lunch, that's how we measure it. English as a second language, you know, children who have IEPs, individual education programs, so special ed students.
Mm-hmm.
I'd see the same percentages.
And higher.
We're serving all comers.
Yes.
Do you want to jump in, Representative Myler, and then let's go back to our callers?
Well, I think you raise an interesting point, and I've not seen any of the data that you're referring to. I know Eileen looks at that much more closely than we do, but it has been a concern that has been raised on an ongoing basis.
Let's go back to our callers again. The number for you to join us today in the exchange 1-800-892-6477. Let's go to Carol in Plymouth. Hi, Carol. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling get clarification on the role of the schools in the situation where a child has an IEP and may receive special education services, related services such as speech therapy or occupational therapy. My understanding is that the public school is required to see to the provision of those services. Can you clarify that for me, and also which entity is financially responsible or administratively responsible?
Okay, yeah. Thanks a lot, Carol, for the call. It's an important question. And Eileen, you first, please.
Sure. The student's district of residence has the financial responsibility, and they cooperate with the charter school in delivering the IEP services that the child needs. The team meets before the child attends the charter school, and the team being the parent, the student, someone from the charter school, and someone from the district school. And they determine how the IEP is going to work for the student in the charter school. And quite frankly, that arrangement has worked out well to date and has its difficulties, as any other program does. But it's been, for the charter schools and the district schools, the most natural sharing of best practices. And that is something that we have tried to do, and we've invited the districts to our sharing of best practices conference every year. We don't have any in attendance, but we feel that the interaction, because of the relationship that the district has to have with the charter school in delivering special education, that's where sharing of best practices is going on.
So it is going on. You just sounds like you've been disappointed at other levels of sharing, but at this special education level, at least, sounds like things are working out okay.
Yes.
Representative Myler.
Yes, I sponsored HB 1128 this year, dealing specifically with this issue. And we will be having a study committee as a result of that piece of legislation looking at special education services to charter schools to make sure that there is a seamless transition and that the appropriate services are being provided and the role of the charter school in receiving those services. We'll be looking at that this summer.
Well, and Sam Evans Brown, both our guests said that this has been a conversation, an issue that's come up. Representative Myler said that the issue of who these schools serve has come up. What are some of the other sort of fundamental issues that have come up surrounding charter schools, again, given your coverage of this issue?
Well, I think the, you know, one of the more interesting things that happened here in New Hampshire that to my mind has yet to be really clarified legally is that in other places in the country you saw some sort of not necessarily gaming, but sort of barriers being erected into entry to charter schools, really rigorous application processes and things like that. And there was an incident of that in southern New Hampshire, because New Hampshire is one of the few states that explicitly in the law it says that you can use academic achievement as a way to screen for entry. And there was one school that appeared to be doing that. They say that they weren't, that they were really the entrance exam that they were asking kids to take was really just a way of letting them know whether or not kids
what it was going to be like.
Yeah, kids fit with the mission of the school. But still, the law says that you can use these factors to screen for entries. And so it's an interesting question. It doesn't appear to be happening here in New Hampshire. But when you ask the question about what people call creaming, are the better students being plucked out of public schools to go to private schools?
Charter schools.
Excuse me. Yeah, sorry. Quite a faux pas there, sorry, but that is sort of the crux of the question. To what extent is the application process a barrier to people who are so busy with several jobs and being a working class family that they can't become a part of a charter school?
So technically, we take all comers, but when it comes down to finding time, having the wherewithal, the understanding, the resources, some barriers possible there.
Right.
I can see both of our other guests want to jump in. Go ahead, Eileen.
First of all, the federal law trumps that New Hampshire statute that does say that it can allow for selection. Federal
so you
law,
can't?
No.
You can't have an entrance exam?
It's not an entrance exam so much as a placement exam, and that's for two reasons. One, like Sam said, so the student knows what they're getting into, because oftentimes they don't, and maybe it is a great idea, but they find that it would be a workload that they didn't expect, or they also would find that the placement exam would say if they are in 7th grade looking to 8th grade, but they're really going to place in 10th or 11th grade math. So it's also to see where the student is going to fall, can they handle it, and is the school able to handle if they're that far ahead, can they excel?
All right, and I want to follow up with you on that, Eileen. Representative Myler, I can see you want to jump in. Lots of calls, too, after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, primary results and prospects for a Republican takeover of the Senate. Then, the role of think tanks in public policy and questions about how they are funded. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
This morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Partly sunny for most of the state today, mostly cloudy in northern Coos County. Chance of some afternoon showers there, with highs today upper 60s, mid-70s statewide. Support for NHPR comes from your listeners and from Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank. Customized business banking for businesses, professionals, municipalities, and not-for-profit organizations online at centrixbank.com. And Comcast Business, continuously investing to keep customers ahead of the technology curve. Comcast Business is built for business. More at business.comcast.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, a new book on the early history of the Mormon Church. Join us for that conversation tomorrow on The Exchange. Dean Spiliotis will be here. Today in The Exchange, a check-in with charter schools. Join us with your thoughts, questions, comments about the role you see charter schools playing in New Hampshire public education. Are they making public education better? What do you think? 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Twitter. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Eileen Luponis, just before the break, we were talking about the idea of a placement exam before you enter a charter school. You were very clear. You said this is not an entrance exam. In other words, even if I flunk, I can still get in.
Mm-hmm.
But would that feel to me like, you know, to a certain type of student, would that feel like an entrance exam?
No.
Or a rejection, so to speak. You know, Laura, you're not cut out for this place.
They need to know what is ahead of them, and it's an honest assessment of what they're going to be up against, and they need to be willing to engage in it. Charters are paid real time, and that's another consideration that they want to make sure everybody fits, because any time that seat is empty, the charter school is not being paid. So they want to make sure that the child is engaged, knows what they're up against, and is going to commit to the mission of that school.
How do you feel, though, that it might raise allegations of creaming, you know, taking the cream of the cream?
When you legally cannot use it, I think it's a moot point.
Yeah. Representative Myler?
Well, I wanted to comment on a point that Sam made, and that deals with the issue of a mission statement. The mission statement, the House Education Committee, of which I sit on, feels very strongly that a mission statement is the guiding factor that directs the charter school program. And if you look at successful businesses across this country, study after study has indicated that a mission statement is the one which really directs the program. Charter schools are reevaluated every 5 years to be rechartered again. And one of the things that the Department of Education looks at is, have they met their mission? So people might say, well, a mission statement is just a bunch of words. But in fact, the mission statement is really pivotal to where the school is going to go, because the curriculum, the staff that they hire, everything is focused on where that mission of that school is going to be going. So it's very important that as people are looking at charter schools, that they in fact look at what that mission statement says of the charter schools, because it's part of the application process.
And you felt like that's very important, Representative Myler. You, as you said, sponsored legislation around this because you want that mission to supplement, to provide services, education that the public district isn't providing already, so there isn't duplication and
Correct.
So forth. Yeah. Sam, go ahead, jump in, and then back to our callers.
And this is just sort of more of a philosophical point that, you know, when we talk about, quote-unquote, creaming, the taking the best students, you know, perhaps you can look at a school that's focused on STEM and is really providing a really rigorous STEM education. We've been saying that charter schools, their job is to provide a service that the public school isn't providing. If a public school is not providing a really rigorous STEM education, and that's what a family and a student is really interested in, that is also a service. So, you know, there's that point as well.
All right, let's take another call. And Kim is waiting in Merrimack. Hi, Kim. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call. I'm the mom of two boys, one who is in charter school, Polaris Charter School in Manchester right now, and both of my sons are enrolled to go into the Founders Academy, which is one of the new charter schools opening this September in Manchester. And I wanted to address this concept of elitism in charter schools. I know personally from my son who's in Polaris right now that for a lot of the kids that are there, if there was not a charter school element for them to get an alternative specialized education, their parents could not afford the private school education that they would be given the choice of. So to say that charter schools are elite when actually they allow everybody to have access to an alternative education, I just don't understand the concept.
What was the need that this school was fulfilling for your sons, Kim?
Well, the Founders Academy, the one that they're going to be attending in September, is a classical 6 to 12 high school. It is the humanities alternative to ASD, which is a STEM school. So it's to fill that need for children who are looking for really strong academic, humanities-based history, language arts-based school to lead them forward into college. You know, there's a lot of attention given to STEM schools, and understandably, but there is also an important to have a humanities component to that, too. And that's what the Founders Academy give my boys.
Yeah. So, Kim, you're going to have to get them there to Manchester, right? There's no public school bus. So how are you going to get around that? And do you think that that's a barrier for some people?
I know that it has been a concern for some people, but I know that we are working on carpooling, that the parents, because you're part of a charter school, you do get involved. and you do work to solve problems. It is not, I know it has this image of, you know, middle-class soccer moms. That's not who it is. It's a wide range of economic population that are sending kids to charter schools.
Kim, thanks a lot. And let's go next to Queechy, Vermont. And Phil's calling from there. Hi, Phil. Good to hear from you.
How you doing? I want to start this off. I don't want to be against charter schools, but I do think that there's an inherent competition between public and charter schools. And I believe the public schools are playing at a disadvantage. And when we take that measurement, we were talking about testing earlier and how charter schools don't test the thin. However, then it gets caught up with, yeah, we could have a this is trying to find a placement for you. And this might be hard, so you might want to go back to the public schools. They're kind of shaving off that possible lower performing student and putting them back into public schools and taking the guys that
Yeah, and Phil, we kind of lost you there. Are you talking about the placement exam that we talked about earlier and saying that a kid might be discouraged by that and get a message that you're better off in the public schools? Is that what you said? Because we kind of lost you a little bit there. Is that your basic point? Looks like we lost Phil. I appreciate the call, Phil. I think that was his basic point. Eileen Luponis, go ahead.
I know of one child in particular that did score poorly on the placement exam for ASD, and he wanted the challenge anyway. He said, I know I'm behind, and he goes, and I know it's going to be a struggle, and he's now flourishing. And in regards to testing, we recently went through our federal audit of our charter school program, and the DOE put together statistics showing that the charter schools actually exceeded the aggregate levels of the district schools, and some more significant in the math area.
Aggregate in terms of just
the NECAP testing? So the charter schools, and they prepared this for the federal audit, that the New Hampshire public charter schools exceed the aggregate test results of the New Hampshire traditional public schools.
So they're doing better on the test. Now, some would say that's because it's a self-selecting group. You know,
and as you can hear from the caller and from all the other testimony that you're hearing, it is a very wide range.
Not just middle-class soccer moms, as as our earlier caller said. Let's go to another call. This is Rona calling from Ashfield, Mass. Hi, Rona. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Laura. So you sort of touched on what I wanted to say earlier, Laura, in that I think charter schools have served a purpose in terms of sort of being a wake-up call to for what the public schools were lacking and what was needed, okay? And I sort of feel at this point that there's no, and this is sort of something I'm really passionate about and trying to create here in Western Massachusetts. I'm sort of at the very beginning stages, is why do we even at this point, why can't we look at public schools and create the same sort of thing within the, quote, regular public school system? Because we have to remember the charter schools are technically still public schools.
Yes.
So why go through all the hassle and politics of money and getting approved for the charter and all this at this point when I think it's clear that what the charter schools have provided is important? So why can't public schools now say, we're going to embrace this? And in districts where there are multiple elementary schools in particular, say, okay, we're going to have a dedicated public school, not a charter school, but a public school that is a STEM school or is a humanities school, as the other caller had suggested.
They call them magnet schools in some cities, right, Rona?
Magnet schools, I believe, are a government-funded program. Mm. It's my understanding, having worked in a magnet school several years ago, that it's a federally funded program that has to do with the demographics and the economics of the community.
I see.
So that's a whole separate thing.
Ron, I think you're asking a fundamental question, and I'm really glad that you called. And I actually want to throw this out to everybody because it's a big question. Sam, I'll start with you. You know, she says, why can't we look at our public schools, create the same great focus, great innovation within the regular public school system? Why go through the hassle, to use her words?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons, and we've touched on this already. I mean, there's a great deal of inertia in the way public schools work. So it's just hard to overcome the way things have been done forever.
Now, what's that inertia about?
Well, I mean, it's just think about what would be required. I mean, you'd have to tell all these teachers to change the way they've been doing things, and they've been doing things for a very long time, perhaps. You'd have to create new, you know, okay, so say you want something to look more like some of these charter schools that do a lot of personalized learning. People have been talking about student-centered learning and personalized learning in public schools for a very long time, but what's required for that is a lot of software. You have to restructure the way the day works, and then you get to the point where, well, maybe that personalized learning doesn't work for everyone. Not everyone is a self-motivated student who likes to learn on their own time. So, you know, then you come, you know, are you going to have something where you have two different schedules and two different calendars within one building, or are you going to have it in separate buildings? Buildings, the way she, the caller was talking about, and then
so speaking of complicated,
right? Yeah. It's very complicated, and it just requires a lot of decisions to be made and priorities to be set. And it's a political process. So that's what I mean when I say inertia. And I think the fundamental point that I'd like to drive home is that, you know, okay, so I mentioned before the show that I was just in a conference in Nashville. We visited a number of charter schools. One of them was a really amazing school in which kids were out 40% of their time. They were out on internships, and they would come back and they
this
would
is a high school.
Yeah, Sam? Yeah, yeah. And they would present what they'd learned, and they would get graded on the presentation, you know, and then for about half the day, 3 days a week, they were in traditional classes. The rest of the time, you know, internships and self-directed learning.
Wow.
And I asked a lot of the kids there, you know, could you roll this out? Could you bring this to the all the public schools? And they're just like, no way. There are so many kids who could just not handle this. So it's you. There are so many ways to design a charter school. How do you scale that up? It's a very hard question.
Well, and I do see some of that, you know, individualized learning, different styles for different kids. I see some of that at the elementary level because I've got one kid in elementary. At the middle school and high school, or especially middle school level, I see less of that.
There's a lot of work in this that is happening. It depends what school district you look at, but it is out there. It is happening. It's just hard to implement. It's,
well, a you topic know, for another day, probably,
day exactly.
Sam. But I'd love to throw this question to both of you. How about you, Representative Myler, Rona, our caller from Western Mass? Why can't we just do all this cool stuff in the regular public schools? Why bother with charter schools?
Well, let's be real clear. The New Hampshire public schools do an excellent job. We have great schools in this state, and they've been nationally recognized. So the issue of the quality of New Hampshire public schools in general is, in my mind, there's no question they are doing a great job. And many of these schools, they are, in fact, doing some STEM programs. They're doing the arts programs. They're providing those curriculum opportunities for students. However, we come back to a main point we made earlier. There are some students who needs something special beyond the larger school. They need a smaller school to pursue their particular interests. And that's what the public charter schools are doing right now.
Well, and here's an email from Candace who kind of says what Rona says. She says, I think that sending a child to a charter school to better prepare them for college, stronger curriculum, as one of our earlier callers said, should be the job of the public school. Candace says, I'm not a fan of charters for better overall education, quote unquote. I would hate to send my child to a traditional public school, knowing this is not the best education offered. So Candace and our caller Rona from Western Mass, Eileen, are both saying, can we do some of this in the regular system?
I think in the rest of the country it is being done. For New Hampshire, the only public education option is a public charter school. In other states, they enjoy public academies, pilot schools, magnet schools, charter schools, and the dreaded voucher programs. But the options here in New Hampshire are just charters, and they're being, you know, constrained and up against opponents that are, you know, bigger than us and outnumber us.
So it's interesting you talked about other options. Why aren't those options available here in New Hampshire?
Well, we actually, going back to Sam's earlier point, how the first authorization was district authorization, it was a very cumbersome process. And a number of years ago, legislation was changed that we supported in order to make that process less time-consuming and shorten that process up for districts to promote more district authorization. And to date, we only have one district-authorized school. So the availability is there. The federal grant has been here, but the districts have not come forward.
Here's an email that I want to close out with. Jack in Bedford, what ideas do you have for generating a vision of the purpose and role of New Hampshire charter schools that is less politically divisive and more inclined to serve the interests of the total system of public schools, including charter schools? For example, Jack says, what proactive steps could have been taken to secure involvement of ASD on the governor's STEM task force? ASD, again, is Academy of Science and Design. Go ahead, Eileen.
We are very proactive. We have we reach out to legislators all the time. We have an annual event with legislators. We reach out to the district for sharing of best practices. I think leadership trickles down from the top, and I think the leadership needs to step forward and embrace these schools and encourage the districts to reach out across the aisle and reach out to the charter schools and engage together in engaging the most students that we can in their learning.
When you say leadership, are you talking about local school boards, local superintendents? You're talking about Governor Hassan. I'm not really sure who you're talking about there.
All of the above.
Do you think Governor Hassan has been supportive of charter schools?
I think Senator Hassan was supportive of charter schools.
But as governor, perhaps less so?
Yes.
Why do you feel that way?
I don't know. We were a bit heartbroken about it, and we're looking for her to step forward and change that.
What do you think about Jack's email, Representative Myler?
Well, I go back to the point that I said earlier.
It's collaboration. Yeah.
Right. I'm a real advocate of that. And I think the Department of Education, frankly, should be the one that brings those parties together. Regarding Governor Hassan, Governor Hassan has to deal with a large budget. And I mentioned the budget constraints. And until we begin to look at the total pie, educational pie, we're going to continue to have these budget constraints. And that's what I hope we can expand that pie so all can have more economy in their programs.
All right. Well, lots more to talk about. I have the feeling we'll be gathering again at some point during the year. I want to thank everybody for coming in. Eileen Luponis, it was good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Eileen Luponis, Executive Director for the New Hampshire Public Charter School Association. Representative Myler, thank you also for your time. That's Mel Myler, again, Democratic Representative from Contoocook, former Executive Director of the New Hampshire chapter of the National Education Association. And Sam, thanks for helping us out. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sam Evans-Brown, NHPR's education reporter. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Exports sustain about 5% of our manufacturing jobs.
Why should the average Granite Stater listening right now care?
It's very important to the economy, and it sustains jobs, it creates
There's
jobs.
Often more to an issue than what appears at first blush. That's why we dig deeper to find out what it means to you. I'm Laura Kanoi. Your calls and emails add to the exchange of ideas. Join us weekday mornings at 9 on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 here on NHPR, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from Dartmouth-Hitchcock, primary care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health. 13 locations statewide. Information at d-hdocs.org. And Vineyard Brands, importers of La Vie FM wines from Famille Parin of the Southern Rhone Valley. Available in New Hampshire state liquor stores. On the web at rode.net.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Steve Roberts of George Washington University, sitting in today for Diane Rehm. Results from primary contests in six states yesterday suggest that Democrats could face big trouble keeping control of the Senate come November. In two key states, Kentucky and Georgia, Republican voters turned down bids from more hardline Tea Party candidates. Senate majority